Public Radio listeners, and welcome to Phoenix's Student Hackers Guide. Well, we've got something a little bit special this month. As some of you guys know, we've just recently had Software Freedom Day, and my local Linux user group was involved in this year's Software Freedom goodness. I did a talk on what is free software, as some of you guys may have heard in the past. I'm a little bit passionate about this subject. So we've got this talk recorded. I hope that you guys enjoy it. My slides will be available at www.thelinuxsociety.org.uk. That's www.thelinuxsociety.org.uk. I hope you guys enjoy. One of the advantages of what we're planning out at Software Freedom Day this year is we're recording all the talks so that people can download them after the event. So if there's something in there that you don't catch, or you want to listen to it again, feel free to download it. If you drop me an email, I'll give you the links. But this website will be living after Software Freedom Day, and you'll be able to find links and all of that sort of stuff, and copies of all the slides and talks that I've done today as well. And if you want any more information about how you can get a hold of this stuff, you could just email me. I thought I'd throw this up. Linus Torvalds, a very kind of famous in our community, but he comes up with some great sayings, and this is a very famous one of his. One of the things we're going to learn, well, I don't really want to use the term learn today, it's probably recognised, it's probably a first time to use, but what is free software? What makes it different to other types of software? Why is free software kind of so important? Free as in freedom, not as in beer. I'm not sure how many of you know about free software, but it's a term that gets used all the time. It's free as in freedom, not free as in beer. And I'll explain that later on. The history of where we come from. Believe it or not, free software it's not a new movement. It's been around for 25 years. So we have history, we have roots, and that's kind of explained in its culture and its views, and I hope to kind of highlight some of those points as well. And where you'll see free software being used, you'll be very surprised, hopefully by the end of this talk, you'll be very surprised to see actually that free software touches your life every day without you knowing it. And where you can find free software. Why are these important? For personal reasons. When you make a choice, it's always best to have an informed choice rather than someone telling you this is what you should do. It's better to have all the information at hand and make your own decision. Understanding the importance of that decision and how it's used. More options generally means more solutions. Making your computer work for you is another very important thing that I hope you take away from today. Society reasons. Sharing questions, sharing knowledge, sharing solutions. Adaptability and flexibility. This is a rough agenda, the kind of outline of the talk. I'm going to try and keep it short and sweet because I'm sure there's lots of other things that you want to be doing and having a look at. Okay, but I'm just going to talk about what is free software, why it's important, different sort of proprietary models and all of that sort of stuff. In the beginning there was I couldn't think of a better way to start this off. Then some stuff happened and a gentleman called Stallman came about. Stallman is the original, Richard Stallman is kind of this original archetype, kind of curator of the free software movement. He's very, very well known in our community, in good and in bad terms. His ideology, he has a very interesting ideology, and it's been shared out. And this slide is about his ideology, his ethics, and how he came to the free software, and how this decision to start this long movement started. Basically, his ideology is that people should share ideas, and software is an idea. It's not a piece of art. It's a recipe. It's a process, and ultimately, it's a mathematical process. And it's like, nowadays, it's like Microsoft saying we own E equals MC squared. It can't be owned. It's not a piece of art. It's not someone's creative ideas. It's a recipe. It's a solution. It's a cookbook. And in the beginning, software was very much that way, that people would share software, people would pass it on, people would take their software and they would add to it and change it. Because one of the key freedoms in free software is the ability to take software and make it work for you. Not this one size fits all, but you are the chief of, you're the chief person when it comes to software, that you decide how it works and how it runs. And he worked, he's a very, very clever gentleman, and he worked in the AI, the artificial intelligence lab at MIT. And what they had is they had these printers. And they used to, they didn't have one printer for two floors. So Stallman wrote software all the time that would let every user know when the printer was out of paper. Very simple functionality. Very happy to pass it back to the company. Works very effectively for MIT. They got a new printer in, and the company said his piece of software didn't work. He contacted the company and said, could I get the source code to your printer, please, so that I can write this feature? No. And that was the answer he got. No. It's our idea. You're not getting it. And this is when he suddenly came to this conclusion that free software is an absolute must. I mean, it's such a basic, if someone is willing to put their time in to make a feature and quite happy to pass it back to the company, he couldn't understand where the problem is. And he uses, in lots of talks, he uses the simile of a recipe. So say I make a dish and you come over to my house and I give you this dish and you say, that's really, really good. Could I have a copy of that recipe? I say, yeah, no problems, here you go. And you take that recipe home. Maybe you could do a little bit more salt, and how about this herb, and how about that herb? I'd come over to your house and say, that's beautiful, what did you do to the recipe? Oh, I did this, and I did this, and I did this. Brilliant, and I take it home, and I taste it. I have another friend come over, and he has that dish, and he looks at that recipe. He says, it's really nice, could I have a copy of it? He goes on, he changes it. And in the end, we have this beautiful recipe made. And now imagine that someone stands in the middle of there and says, I own that recipe. You have no right to share it. In fact, you're breaking the law if you share that recipe. That is proprietary software. That's Windows, that's Mac, that's wherever you look, that's happening. The people don't have the right to look at how something works and make it better. And he uses that kind of story to kind of outline what proprietary software is. It's very hard to talk about free software without talking about software being owned by a commercial entity. His answer was the Free Software Foundation, which started about 20 years ago. And he wrote basically a manifesto, but he also wrote what's known as the GPL, the General Public License. And what this is a license that enables developers of free software to release their software and for it not to be stolen, their ideas taken by another company and have that sold as their own. It enforced that if I work on free software, it means that those freedoms that I afforded or were afforded are afforded to you and it can't be broken. It's a legal document. And the same as any kind of sort of software. GNU, this is very interesting. This is a very beautiful play on words and this will show you the spirit of where we come from. GNU is not Unix. I'm sure probably some of you guys don't know what Unix is. I very rarely touch it myself. But Unix was the old, it's still very popular, but it's what academic institutes used 25, 30 years ago as their operating system. And what Stallman decided to do was release an operating system that was free from patents. It was released to the community. And what he did was he played on the word. GNU is not Unix. And if you notice, the G in GNU stands for GNU. It's a recursive acronym. So it just shows you some of the play that people have. The free software definition. I'm going to show you what these are. And you can see that this is a very good way of showing why it's important, free software, that is. The freedom to run a program for any purpose. I know this sounds strange, but there's lots of software out there that you can use at home, but you can't use for commercial use. Or you can use at home, but you can't use in academia. One of the fundamental freedoms is the right to run a program for whatever purpose you decide to do with it. The freedom to study how this program works. and adapt your needs, and access to the source code is needed to do this, but the right to actually look at how software achieves its job, that's a fundamental right, and it means that solutions can be passed on. Freedom to redistribute copies so that you can help your neighbour. This is exactly what I was talking about with the recipe. The freedom to make modifications and say, I think this modification will work effectively in your environment. You should try this. And that right to do that is an important right. The freedom to improve programming and release your improvements to the public so that the whole community can benefit from it. This is a fundamental right as well. And what this means is if software doesn't afford you these rights, it isn't free software. These are non-negotiable, these are absolute. If you use free software, you are guaranteed these rights, not only by a code of ethics, but by law, by a user agreement that everyone uses. This is Stallman, this is the curator that I was talking about. He does look like a hippie Unix hacker, I'm happy to say this. He's very, very passionate about what he does, very passionate indeed. Some terminology. I'm going to use some terminology if I use a term that you don't understand, just stick your hand up and shout at me, okay, and I'll try and explain it. But you'll hear me use the term FOSS or maybe FLOSS. And what that means is free, Libre, open source software. Okay, it's just a very nice way of saying what software is. Don't mistake free software for freeware, shareware, or shared source. They're incredibly different. Freeware is an example of the first freedom. The first freedom that I talked about earlier on, about the freedom to run a program for any purpose. Freeware packages, you'll find, most of them say free to use for public, free to use for home use, but can't use for commercial use. It doesn't afford you the freedoms under Free Software Foundation's GPL. Shareware is the same. Or that it doesn't cost anything. It doesn't afford you freedom. You might hear me term and say FSF. I'm just meaning Free Software Foundation. They can be found at fsf.org. GPL means the General Public License. A lot of people will have this confused and say that, oh, the GPL means the GNU Public License. It doesn't, okay? GNU is a project and a different entity to the Free Software Foundation, so it actually just means the General Public License. Developers and end users, I know this sounds maybe technical, try not to worry about it. Developers and end users is exactly what it sounds like. People who make software and people that use software. So when you use your Internet Explorer or you turn your computer on, you're an end user. When you rewrite how your web browser works, then you're a developer. I'm not sure what that means. An open source. Open source is kind of like a diluted version of free software. It just means that the source code is open. Open source does not have all the freedoms that free software promotes. And you may hear me use terms like vendor lock-in. I'm sure you'll probably hear this throughout the day if you're here for other talks. Vendor lock-in is when you use a software for so long that you can't make a choice anymore. So you're an organization and you always have used Microsoft Office, and to the point where you no longer can take a backward step. And that vendor has locked you into their product because you can't easily change. This is kind of what I was talking about. Source code, the access to source code is incredibly important. It stops us from having to reinvent the wheel every day. Shared problems are shared solutions. If you have a problem, the likelihood is somewhere else on this planet, someone else is having the same problem as you. And if what you find is that people come together with a problem, they will find a solution. Common ground is shared knowledge. And sharing knowledge is an important thing. More experts working on a common goal tends to find solutions quicker, and this is very true. If you have people who are invested in making something work, you will find that they will find a solution because there is a benefit to them. People produce better work when they're invested in it, and then peers are free to review it. It's a bit like if you were going to write a story and you were going to release it to the world, you would do your best to make sure that story is good quality, that it highlights your best work, that you're good at what you do. And this is much the same in software. Solutions to problems are in the code. We all maybe speak lots of different languages in this room. I don't, but I'm sure there's people in here that does. Programming language is a universal language. It doesn't matter what you speak. Programming language is the same in any country. And it doesn't matter if your developer speaks Russian and your chief architect speaks English. They can speak in programming language. And that's why source code is very, very important. And this means that how you fix something in a Russian language is the same as how you fix something in an English language. This means that if a program doesn't have any features and there's something that you want and there's something that you see in another program, so that'd be really nice if this program's brilliant, but I want it to do what my other program does. It means that people can go and have a look at this other program and say, that's how they do it. Let's see how we can apply it to our case. And that's a very important freedom. And this is sort of what I talked about earlier on. Software is documentation. If there is any developers out there, you probably will love this term, because that's exactly what software is. That's exactly what source code is. It's documentation. And documentation is software. I thought I would put a little picture up here, seems as I went for the kind of Star Wars kind of feel for this one. Proprietary software. Every car needs a steering wheel. Who owns the steering wheel? It's a concept, it's part and parcel of how something works. In software, if ideas have ownerships, then who owns this? Believe it or believe it not, Microsoft own the multiple click select. That's double clicking, if you're wondering what that is. Okay? They actually own that. That's their painted in technology. So selecting something on a computer with more than one click is owned by Microsoft. Who owns the steering wheel? That's the message that I'm trying to get across. If we can drive a car, someone must own that wheel. Someone must have come up with that idea. But in the reality of this, is a needed part of how that works. And the same in software. Solutions are very much the same. The ability to play MP3s is proprietary software. That the ability to play an audio codec is owned by someone. It's not owned by Microsoft, but they still ship it. Microsoft spend more money defending patent infringements than they do to pursuing people that infringe their patents. That's how crazy proprietary software actually is. That software companies are suing software companies because how you play audio, how you select something, how you read something. But somewhere along the line, someone thinks it's okay to say, I own how you look at a Word document. I own how we transmit, I own how we send data. What you'll find in proprietary software, you will never ever own that operating system. You may own the hardware that runs it, but you will never ever own what's on it. If you run XP and Mac, you're licensed to run it. You don't own a copy of it, you own a license. And that license allows you to use it. It doesn't allow you to make any changes. It doesn't allow you to have a look at the source code. You can use it, and here's my permission to do it. You're explicitly prohibited from sharing solutions. You know, someone will stand in your way and say, that's our idea, you cannot share it. The reality of it is marketing deals dictate majority of people's computer use, not the best. We all like to think that we use the best software for the job. That we use, you know, if you were building a wall, you would want to use the best trowel, the best cement. And you would do that on merit. You would do that by, I've used this and I think this is an effective tool and I want to keep on using it. This is not being afforded to people. This is a deal with manufacturers, a deal with software houses. And that's how people are running proprietary software without even noticing it. And I think that that's a shame, because it harks back to what I said earlier on about an informed choice. You know, getting all your options in. I swear you're not then locked in again, honestly. Sometimes there's a very famous book called The Cathedral and the Bazaar. And what it does is it looks at how the free software community kind of exploded and how we develop software faster than commercial software houses. And he talks about software in this context of standard software development is like a cathedral, and free software development is like a bazaar, where you have this mass marketplace where lots of people are doing lots of different jobs, and by this kind of organized chaos, this unity happens, and then one overall idea happens. It was very important, this book. A guy called Eric Simmons is a very big advocate of free software, and I'm going to do a quick short poll, but how many of you in here have heard of Firefox? It's the web browser. Okay. Firefox used to be known as Netscape before it became Mozilla. And what this book did, it didn't make the decision, but what Netscape did is they looked at this book and thought, the only way that we can stop Microsoft from taking over the server market is to release our software free and give the source code away. And what happened was Firefox was born. And we did a straw poll in here, and virtually everyone put their hands up. So this shows you kind of how this bizarre effect actually works. How's free software different to proprietary? Well, how are apples different to oranges? The community itself owns free software. There's no individual that I own this bit of software and you can't use it. We all are. Every single person in this room owns free software. You have rights to use it, it's there for you. Secrets as a commodity versus sharing as an asset. This is really what it is. If you're hiding your source code and keeping it away from people, then you're treating it as a commodity. Rather than saying, here is how we did it, can you make it better? And sharing is an asset. Diversity, and a bit more diversity. This is what happens in free software. Many people, many different cooks bringing in experiences to make this recipe. And that's how it's very different. There's only a few flavors in proprietary software. Microsoft Windows, Mac OS, and Linux. It's a whole freedom of choice. And it's just my example here. There's a distribution called Ubuntu. It's a very popular Linux distribution. And there is, just off the top of my head, four or five different variations of it. The very popular one, if you don't like it in that flavor, you can have this flavor. If you want to make your computer into a TV, you can run MythUbuntu. If you're an education institute, you can run EduBuntu, which is Ubuntu made with lots of education software. If you want to be make sound and video, there's one called Ubuntu Studio. And that's just one distribution. There's lots of different distributions that use free software to deliver their message across and show their work out to the world. Users contribute directly to software. This is a very strange concept, but if you use software and you say, this doesn't work for me, there's something wrong, you can actually speak to the developer and say, every time I do this, it breaks. And he says, really? Can you send me some information? And next thing you know, there's a patch been released, and you've directly contributed to fixing a piece of free and open source software. This is a really nice feature. I want to be able to do this. Is there any chance that we could do that? And then the next release, someone's written that into it. You're directly contributing to it. You don't get that in proprietary. No one sends an email to Microsoft and says, you know, Internet Explorer is brilliant, but could we do this? You don't get to input. It's freedom. You know, and this is the big difference. This is, you know, you're giving over, in proprietary software, you're controlled as a user. In free software, you're liberated as a user. And that's Bill Gates, if anyone's wondering, the one of the original Microsoft guys. I don't think he really recommends Ubuntu, but that's just for some of the Linux Society people that are in here. Free as in freedom, not as in beer. If I was given a beer for every time I said this, say, it'd be, you know, spend the next 2 months in the Priory or something. What freedom software means is freedom. Free as in freedom, not free as in beer. It doesn't mean that software is free software. It doesn't mean that you're not bound to get billed for it. You have the right to redistribute copies and to charge for that. What it does afford is, what it means is that those freedoms that are passed on to you, you must pass on to everyone else. So everyone else gets to have the same piece of the pie. You know, no one's excluded. Because you give something away doesn't mean you're not responsible for it. You know, if I gave you a piece of software, I told you this was going to work perfectly on your computer, and then I blew up your computer, you wouldn't be particularly happy with me. And because software is free, it doesn't mean that there isn't some liability towards it. I'm not sure what's going on with this lighting. If you make modifications, this is another thing, if you make modifications, you don't have to share. You don't have to. If you're a bank and you find a solution that is important to how you bank, as long as you don't sell your software, you don't have to share those changes. You have the right to make private modifications and keep those secret. That's another misnomer in free software, that if you make a change, you need to give it to everyone. You don't always. And an example of this is Google. Google, eBay, Amazon, Facebook, Yahoo. All use free software in some way, shape or another. Google have the right to make private modifications and let people use that service. So Google runs what's called a LAMP, Linux, Apache, MySQL, PHP, and this is the open source bundle that basically web ISPs and stuff use. And they all use that, and they're able to make software, they're able to make private modifications, and they're able to keep their commercial advantage. And that's what free software is. By guaranteeing those freedoms, what it actually means is that people can go about daily business without worrying about how do we release an operating system. Freedom could be called socially moral, because you're passing on freedoms and giving it to everyone, which is, you know, it's a nice thing. Free beer is only in dreams. Doesn't happen to me very often. Open source, they're not the same thing. They have different mindsets, they have different roots, but a similar goal. Sometimes a word of stigma, and this is the reality of free software. When I turn around and say free to you guys, most of you will be thinking it doesn't cost, and that's what free means. And the problem is in the world, if you go to software houses and say, you know, the big companies, here's free software, and I'll sit there and say, but if it doesn't cost anything, it can't be worth anything. That's a bit of a misnomer. So the term open source was kind of invented. And what this enabled, kind of freedom lovers, of a better word, to be able to go into corporate businesses and say, no, it's open source. You know, we take all the benefits from it, but we have some kind of ownership to it. And open source is very different, and if you're interested in it, certainly grab me afterwards and I'll talk to you about it. It was just basically to start off anew. The open source definition is very, very different to the free software. As you know, it's free software, there's five freedoms, and you've showed four of them. The open source definition is 12. And there's still ownership. Companies have the right to own their codes. And one of the differences in open source is that if you make modifications to a source code, you need to put your name to the bottom of it, so that the credibility of the author of the original document is not in question. So if I wrote a bit of software, it works perfectly, I give it to John, John messes about with it and makes a really bad piece of software, my name is kept clear because he signed for his software changes. Lots of differences. We all start from somewhere. Free software is about, the Free Software Foundation is around 25 years old this year. So it goes to show you that it's not something new. When you look at where our history is, Homebrew Computing Club was a club in America where Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak were, that's where they basically originally kind of got their first ideas for Apple, which later became, you know, iPods and iMacs and iThis and iThat, but that's where they originally put out their ideas. Bill Gates wrote a very famous letter to the Homebrew Computing Club saying, "You're pirating software." And it was very derogatory. You can find that pretty much anywhere online. The Model Railway Club as well holds a lot of our roots. I know it sounds very strange, but in Berkeley, the Model Railway Club, they used to take any kind of hardware they could and hack it to do lots of different stuff. So it started off as a Model Railway Club, and then all of a sudden they do lots of different stuff. I think trains were just part of it. They were basically hackers before hackers, and you know, hackers is a term that's been taken over by the media. And what hackers originally meant was that someone playfully worked with stuff. And what it's been changed to is there's a term called cracker, which is someone who illegally tries to break into computers, illegally tries to steal stuff. And the media, instead of using the term cracker, used hacker. So what you equate to being a hacker is actually probably more to what the cracker is. But these are what these people were. They would take hardware, they would take software, and they would make it do things that it wasn't designed to do. And that's originally what a hacker is about. Artificial Intelligence Lab at MIT is a very big birthplace to us. And all of these things, all of these groups had one thing in common, sharing knowledge. You'll see Linux and free and open source software and a lot more things than you will ever realize. Embedded devices, mobile phones, audio players, set-top boxes, you know, these guys set-top boxes. Most of them are running Linux kernels. So it touches your life in ways that you'll not know. When you play your council tax, Dundee City Council use free and open source software to actually, for their credit card payments. So when you pay your council tax, free and open source software is at the back of that. As I've talked about some of them, Amazon, eBay, Yahoo, Facebook, I'm sure everyone's heard of at least one of those. Half of the Fortune 500 allegedly runs Unix, Linux, free software, direct versions. It's very hard to get those figures because obviously companies don't tend to say how they're saying and how they're doing them. The big advantage for our future in free software is our ability, our scalability, our flexibility. Because we share our knowledge, it means that we're able to get into every nook and cranny and find a solution to fit that problem. Organizations and governments running FOSS. The French ministers, all of them are running Kubuntu now. They're not running Windows. Russia has rolled out 12,000 users in schools with it. I mean, the adoption of Linux itself, which is a piece of free software, is proliferating everywhere. NASA runs Linux. Apparently not on their space station. If anyone's read the newspapers recently, the space station is running Windows XP and it has a virus. But it has no antivirus software on space station, and it's not like they can send a CD up there to fix it. So, yeah. You can find FOSS in lots of different places. Google is your friend. I say this every day, you wouldn't believe how often. But, you know, use a search engine, type the word, free and open source software. Online resources for free and open source. There isn't software packages on the internet that are supported as the free and open source community. It's the free and open source community. The Free Software Foundation is always a good place to start. DistroWatch is a very good place to find Linux distributions. SourceForge is a very good place to find software that's done, that's released in open source. And you're probably running it without realizing it. Is there any ideas or thoughts about what I've spoken to you about today? Please feel free to throw any ideas to me. Any questions about what I've talked about? Okay, well, I'd like to thank you all for coming.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.